Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Cheva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 21, Chapter entitled Explanation of Vedic Path, Text Number 28. Nate mam angajananti. Hridistam ya idam yataha. Ukta shastra yasu tripo. Yata nihara chakshusha. Nate mam angajananti. Hridistam ya idam yataha. Ukta shastra yasu tripo. Yata nihara chakshusha. Nate mam angajananti. Hridistam ya idam yataha. Ukta shastra yasu tripo. Yata nihara chakshusha. Nate mam angajananti. Hridistam ya idam yataha. Ukta shastra yasu tripo. Yata nihara chakshusha. Na.
Na.
Do not.
No.
Te.
Te.
They.
They.
Mam.
Mam.
Me.
Me.
Anga.
Anga.
My dear Uddhava.
My dear
Uddhava. Jananti.
Jananti.
No.
No.
Hridistam.
Hridistam.
Seated within the heart.
Seated
within the heart.
Yaha.
Who is?
Who is?
Idam.
Idam.
This created universe.
This created universe.
Yataha.
Yataha.
From whom it comes.
From whom it comes.
Ukta shastra.
Ukta shastra.
Who consider Vedic ritual activities to be praiseworthy. Or else, for whom their own ritualistic performances are like the weapon that kills sacrificial animal. He, indeed, asu tripa, interested only in sense gratification. Yata, just as. Nihara, in fog. Chakshusha, those whose eyes. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. My dear Uddhava, persons dedicated to sense gratification, obtained through honoring the Vedic rituals, cannot understand that I am situated in everyone's heart and that the entire universe is none different from me and emanates from me. Indeed, they are just like persons whose eyes are covered by fog. Translation responsibly. My dear Uddhava, persons dedicated to sense gratification, obtained through honoring the Vedic rituals, cannot understand that I am situated in everyone's heart. And that the entire universe is none different from me. and emanates from me.
Indeed, they are just like persons
whose eyes are covered by fog. Purport. The word Ukta Shastra refers to the chanting of certain Vedic hymns by which one obtains fruitive results in this world and the next. The word Shastra also indicates a weapon. And thus Ukta Shastra also means the weapon used in Vedic sacrifice to kill the sacrificial animal. Persons exploiting Vedic knowledge for bodily gratification are slaughtering themselves with the weapon of materialistic religious principles. They are also compared to those trying to see within a dense fog. The false bodily concept of life is one in which one ignores the eternal soul within the body is a dense fog of ignorance that blocks our vision of God. Lord Krishna therefore begins his instruction in Bhagavad Gita by clearing away the dense ignorance of the bodily concept of life. Religion means the laws of God. The Lord's final order or law is that every conditioned soul surrender unto him, learn to serve and love him, and thus go back home, back to Godhead. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. Omagyan Timadandasya Ginunjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Badantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu, Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Gadadha, Srivasadi, Gaura, Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So it is explained by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, in the Nectar of Devotion, that the problem with all the conditioned souls in this material world is avidya. Avidya means ignorance. Everyone in this material world is born in ignorance. That is the common denominator. That is the common feature of everyone in the material world. Everyone is in ignorance. Ignorance of what? The Sanskrit word for this material world is maya. Maya means that which is not. In other words, you take it to be one thing, but actually it is the opposite thing. So you take something which is temporary to be eternal. Just like when Yudhishthira was asked, what is the most amazing thing in this world? Then Yudhishthira said, everyone has seen that everyone else before them has died, but no one thinks that it will happen to them. That is the greatest wonder in this world. Everyone thinks, I will not die. Everyone else has died before me, everyone is dying around me, but it will not happen to me. So this is maya, illusion. We think everything is eternal in this world, but it is temporary. We also think that everything in this world is will bring us happiness, but actually it brings us distress. Just like, where do people search for the most happiness in this world? Where do people think you'll get the most happiness? Right? You think it will come through male-female relationships. So the whole world is based on attempting to glorify and attempting to achieve perfection through male-female relationships. But the reality is, it's exactly the opposite to what you think it is. That is called maya. You think it will bring happiness, but actually it brings distress. Srila Prabhupada said, man is good, woman is good, but together they are bad. Right? And why is that? Because it's the material world. Because you're not a man and you're not a woman. You think you are a man, you think you are a woman. So because you have this illusion, this avidya or this ignorance, then you try to extract pleasure from a place where there is not pleasure. It is not actually pleasurable. Just like Hari Kesh Prabhu used to be one of the gurus in our movement. He used to give very humorous lectures. And one time he said, just like, what is the most famous love story in the Western world? Romeo and Juliet. So he said, what do you think would have happened? Because at the end of the story they both die. Which one comes and finds the other one dead? Romeo finds Juliet. Yeah, so Romeo comes and he finds Juliet dead, and then he drinks poison. He dies, and then she wakes up. She's not actually dead. So then she drinks poison as well, and that's how the story finishes. Okay? That's the end of the story. Romeo and Juliet key. That's how the story finishes. So it's not a good story because one of the rules in Vedic drama is that the story must always have a happy ending. So it's not a good story because it doesn't have a happy ending. Vedic dramas must always finish on a happy note. You'll see all the Vedic dramas, everything finishes happily. So anyway, Hari Kesh Prabhu, then he mentioned, he said, then what do you think would have happened if they had stayed alive? Right? If they hadn't have died? They both died, right? That's how the story finished. But he said, because it's the ultimate love story, young man, young woman, right? Italians, very passionate, very romantic, right? So they both died, but what happens if they have stayed alive, right? He said, statistically, right, she probably would have had about 8 kids, right? Turned into a big Italian mama, right, with a moustache. Right? Right? He would have had to work like a dog, right? To support his 8 kids. And statistically speaking, it probably would have ended in divorce. Right? Romeo and Juliet key. So that's the material world, right? You think it's one thing, but actually it's the opposite. You think you'll get unlimited happiness from material pleasure, but actually it brings distress. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says, happiness in the mode of passion is nectarian in the beginning, but it is poisonous in the end. And all of us have experienced that. Right? If you've ever had a male-female relationship in this world, then you'll understand what I'm talking about. Right? Happiness in the beginning, but long term, like that. There is distress. I can say whatever I want because my wife is not here this morning. And it means that none of you are allowed to tell her. What's that? She doesn't listen to the lectures. So. Luckily. But this is the reality. Right? If she was here, I'd say something else. But this is the reality. It's not her problem, it's me. She's a good person, she's a good devotee. But I am imperfect, so therefore there are faults, and therefore there is disharmony. Like that. It's not all disharmony. I'm not trying to make out like it's like that. But it's not what we think it is in the material world. In the material world, you think you will get so much happiness. Just like they write all the love songs. And you turn on the radio, you listen. We don't listen to the radio. But if you turn on the radio, you listen to all the love songs. She is the one. And then next year, there'll be another love song. She is the one. And then she is the one. And it goes on and on and on. Because they think that this will give ultimate pleasure. It is displayed like this. Right? The entire Hollywood and Bollywood, right, which are the two biggest music and movie industries in the world, Hollywood and Bollywood, then between the two of them, they try to lead the public, the masses, into an illusion that ultimate happiness is found when you find the ultimate woman or the ultimate man, and then you'll be perfectly happy. This is what it is. This is what is portrayed, but it is not like that, right? Because in the Vedic system, it is not based on the mode of passion. Just because she is beautiful, or because he is handsome and rich, then we will join together and we'll have a marriage, right? But that is based on passion. And that will lead to distress in the future. Whereas in the Vedic system, then the person that you unite with, the person you marry with, if it is done in the mode of goodness, right? Krishna says mode of goodness means in the beginning, right? There may be some austerity, or in the beginning there may be some duty. But in the long term, that will lead to a more peaceful situation, and that will lead to long-term happiness. Because you are following duty, you are following Dharma. And this is how the Vedic system works. Sense gratification can be had. Right? In this material world, there is a license for sense gratification. If you want the association of the opposite sex, there is a license. You can do it. Right? But it must be regulated. It must be based on Dharma. And in that way, if someone follows that system, then long term it will be satisfying, right? And long term it will be functional, and long term it will assist you to reach the ultimate goal of life. Actually, last night in the Bhakti Vaibhav course, we're covering the pastime of Puranjana in the end of the fourth canto, and there's one purport last night. Prabhupada said the wife is meant to satisfy all of the functions of the Vedas, right? Because what are the categories within the Vedas? Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha, right? So it is the wife who satisfies all of these, right? Dharma, she maintains Dharma within the family, right? Because the husband has stronger sexual desire, but the wife protects the husband so that he does not fall down to illicit sex. Right? So she maintains Dharma, right? Is dependent upon the wife. Right? She maintains the Dharma. And then Artha means economic development. Right? The man becomes inspired to economically develop or to work because of the wife. Right? If the wife is if she is satisfying the husband, and she is creating a satisfying grihastha ashram, satisfying griha, then the husband becomes inspired to maintain the family, and then economic development takes place. So it is once again is based upon the wife. And then karma means sense gratification, right? The wife has to create a very pleasant atmosphere within the home, so when the husband comes home, his senses are satisfied, right? Not through illicit sex, but just through having a pleasant griha, or a pleasant home life, or a pleasant experience. And then ultimately, moksha. Moksha means liberation. The wife and husband, if they are dharmic, if they are following if the marriage is based on a long-term commitment in the mode of goodness, it will lead to enlightenment and it will lead to liberation. If it is based on the mode of passion, which means in the beginning it is nectar, right? But long-term, it will become full of distress. But in the if the relationship is in the mode of goodness, in the beginning there may be some duty, there may be some tapasya, there may be some austerity, but long term they inspire each other to reach Krishna consciousness. And that is actually the system. The wife inspires the husband, the husband leads the wife. That is the system, like that. So in the Vedic system, it is meant that the husband and wife will assist each other to overcome avidya, overcome illusion, overcome maya. Right? Okay, we're in maya now, but the whole point of Vedic life is to overcome maya, is to overcome our illusion, is to overcome our attachment. Okay, we have attachments now, we're in maya now, but the husband and wife should assist each other in liberating themselves from that. It is not that you will remain like that. It is not that you remain attached to the end of your life. In old age you still have the same strong attachment. Then you've missed the whole point. If you get to old age and your main attachment is still to your husband, or your main attachment is still to your wife, then you've missed the whole point. Right? When you get to old age, right, the main attachment should be to Radha and Krishna. That should be the main attachment. Gaura, Nitai, Jagannath, Balaram, and Subhadra. Giriraj Govardhan, Nisringadeva Bhagavan. This should be your main attachment. If you get to old age, if you've gone through your Grihastha ashram, and you're not feeling that that is your main attachment, then you've missed the point. Now, what is the point? What is the point that you're like Romeo and Juliet? What is the point? Your wife is 90, and you're 92, and she's about to die, and you run in and say, "Don't die, don't die. I can't live without you. Who will make my chapatis?" Okay. What's the point? Right? What is the point? Right? Is that the way your consciousness is going to be at the end? No. You have to gradually shift your consciousness to Krishna. That's the point. Gradually your consciousness has to shift more and more to Krishna. We don't have to wait till old age, but the point is that if you get old and this hasn't happened, then you've missed the whole point. But you should be doing it now. It should be now. The most important person in your life is? Who is the most important person in your life? Thanks, Vera. That takes the class into a different direction. Should we go in that direction? Or should we? Who is the most important person in your life? Actually, it's a good answer. It's an honest answer. Like that. But it should be Guru and Krishna. That should be the most important person in your life. But that may or may not be the point right now. You may have attachment more to the material energy. But it should not be like that. So you should feel over time that your attachment is shifting. Prabhupada says in Krishna book, this is the measurement of spiritual advancement. You should feel more attachment to Krishna, less attachment to Maya. Sometimes the scales, they counterbalance. When you put more on one side, then the other side goes up. When you put more, then they go the other direction. So sometimes you feel in your spiritual life, you're becoming more attached to the material energy. Sometimes you feel like you're becoming more attached to Krishna. So you should feel, even though it goes up and down a little bit, you should feel over time it gets heavier and heavier and heavier. There is more Krishna, more Krishna, more Krishna in your life. Right? Until Maya becomes insignificant. So this is the point. This is the entire Vedic system. Right? We're meant to be, over time, overcoming our avidya and rising up to the spiritual platform. Now, as it is said here, that the problem in the material world, as Krishna, as Arjuna says to Krishna at the end of the third chapter, Arjuna says, what is it that makes me act in a particular way, even though I am feeling, Mataji, Mother, you sit on, so Mataji's going to sit on that side. So Arjuna says to Krishna, what is it that makes me feel like sometimes I want to do a particular thing, even though I know it is not the right thing to do. Do you sometimes feel like that? Has it ever happened to you? In the last 10 minutes? Sometimes you feel like you want to do something, even though you know it is not good for you. Right? Your intelligence is in the background saying, don't do it, don't do it. Right? It's just like, it is described that Ravana, you remember Ravana? He had how many heads? Ten. Now, only one of them, who was the main head, he was the Asura. The other nine heads were actually quite nice guys. They were actually pretty good, because they all said to him, at the end, like, Ram, he came out to fight Ram, because everyone got killed. Right? They killed all the generals in his army, and then they sent out Indrajit, who was his son, who had conquered Indra, and then he was killed. So then he woke up Kumbhakarna, and he said, you go out there and do something. And Kumbhakarna got killed, and then there's no other choice. He had to go out himself. So he went out, and then Ram defeated him, and Ram said, okay, now you go back you dog. Ram was quite angry at that point. He said, you go back inside there, you dog, right? And I'll give you one more night to give Sita back. And if you give Sita back, I'll spare your life. Otherwise, you come back out here tomorrow, you will fall on the battlefield dead. He said, that's your choice. Right? So Ravana went back in, right? And then there were 10 heads. And the other 9 heads were saying, give Sita back. And the one head said, be quiet. I think he didn't say it exactly like that. He said it probably more full on. But he said, be quiet. Right? Did not listen. So is it like that sometimes for us? Right? The other 9 heads are saying, calm down. Do not do this. It is not good for you. Right? And then your one head says, be quiet. Right? And then you are focused. Ekeha Kuru Nandana. I'm focused. I want my sense gratification and nothing will stop me. So this is demoniac consciousness. So Arjuna says to Krishna, what is it that makes us feel like that? Sometimes, even against our will, we act in such a way that we should not act. What does Krishna say? Anyone here read the Bhagavad Gita before? 3rd chapter. End of the 3rd chapter. Is anyone doing Bhakti Shastri? I see you guys doing Bhakti Shastri. What does Krishna say? Huh? Yeah, there's lust, right? Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Raja Guno Samudbhava. Kama, it is lust, only Arjuna, which makes us act against their will. Lust is such a powerful force. Lust comes out principally between the attraction between the sexes. But lust means, kama means desire. Means any material desire. Right? Any material desire in this world. Right? Which takes us away from Krishna. Any desire which is not for Krishna's pleasure. Any desire which is for our pleasure. Right? That is kama. Right? That is lust. So lust is very, very powerful. And lust has a younger brother. What is the younger brother of lust? Krodh. Krodha is called Kamanuj. Just like we have Ramanuj. Who is Ramanuj? Lakshman. Lakshman always follows Ram. Means Ramanuj, always following Ram. And anger is Kamanuj, always following close behind lust. When your lust is not satisfied, how do you feel? Angry. So powerful. Such a powerful force. And when anger takes over your consciousness, Krishna says, when anger becomes manifest, in the 2nd chapter he describes, then it completely clouds the consciousness. You forget everything. You forget whatever proper behavior should be there, or proper speech should be there, then everything is forgotten. Just like if someone becomes angry, they say things they would normally not say. Sometimes you become very angry, and then you'll say things that you normally would not say, that later you will forget. Or you'll do things you normally would not do, and later you will regret. So this is the potency. This is all born, as Krishna says, from the mode of passion. Rajagun, Samudbhava, means it is springing from the mode of passion. That's why Rupa Goswami recommends, and Prabhupada recommends, and the Bhagavatam recommends, devotees have to elevate themselves to the mode of goodness. You have to live in the mode of goodness. You can't be passionate all the time like that. It is not mode of passion and mode of ignorance are not conducive for spiritual advancement. You have to get into the mode of goodness. How do we begin to get into the mode of goodness? Yeah, Jenny? That purified that. Yeah, it's true. That was the consciousness. First step, if you want to get more into the mode of goodness, then you have to rise early in the morning. Right? You go to Mangalati. Because this time of the day is sattva gun. Right? Just like when you get up in the morning, do you see people walking around? Right? Do you see people walking around in the streets? No. Why? Because this society is not in sattva gun. Right? They won't get up until rajagun begins to appear. Rajagun begins to appear around about 8 o'clock in the morning. Well, these days it appears earlier. They all start getting up at 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, just so they can get to their job. Just like now, if you go into the Westgate Bridge, big traffic jam. Right? All the traffic just pouring into the city at a snail pace at the moment because it's so many people trying to get to their mode of passion. So if you live in the mode of passion, it's very difficult to make spiritual progress. One has to rise to the mode of goodness. So you rise early in the morning and you chant the holy names of Krishna, and this will help to uplift the consciousness to the pure spiritual platform. So Arjuna says to Krishna, what is it that makes me act even against my will? Krishna says it is calm. And then Prabhupada explains in the following verses and in the purports that the capital of lust within the gross body and the subtle body is where? Where is the capital? What's the capital? Has anyone read the third chapter? Bhagavad Gita. Very good. The capital is the intelligence. Right? In the intelligence, the lust takes hold. Right? Because the mind controls the senses. Actually, we enjoy in the mind. Right? Whatever we enjoy in the senses, it is enjoyed in the mind. Right? The mind is the enjoyer of the senses. He controls the senses. But in order for your mind to get enjoyment, then your intelligence has to go into planning mode. Right? Just like if a boy is attracted to a girl, or a girl is attracted to a boy, then it is the intelligence who helps them to fulfill their mind's desire and the desire of the senses. Right? So it is the intelligence which is the capital of lust. Intelligence makes all the plans, all the schemes, how to fulfill our material desires. So then, it is explained by the Acharyas, and we mentioned in a few classes ago, that, is it Baladeva Vijayabhushan or Vishnu Chakravarti? One of the two. Says in their commentary on the third chapter of the Gita, they say that when you're dealing with the mind, because the mind becomes very lusty, and the mind says, I want this particular thing, then it is the intelligence, it is the duty of the intelligence to control the mind. Right? The intelligence has to become strong. Instead of the intelligence facilitating sense gratification, the intelligence has to learn to control the mind and keep the mind under control so it stays focused on Krishna consciousness. So then the intelligence has to become very strong. Now how does the intelligence become strong? By hearing Shastra. Just like right now, what are we doing? We're doing push-ups for our intelligence. We're making our intelligence strong. Do you feel your intelligence becoming more clear? That's why you have to hear the Bhagavatam. That's why every day you have to read Prabhupada's books. Prabhupada said you have to read his books 1 hour or 2 hours every day. Hands up if you're meeting your quota. One, two. Good. Three. Good. Okay. Three devotees meeting the quota. What are the rest of us doing? Prabhupada said 1 or 2 hours a day you should be reading his books. If you cannot read, then you should be listening to the lectures of your guru or Srila Prabhupada 1 or 2 hours a day. But there should be that much Shravanam and Kirtanam in your consciousness every day. Just like every morning, I think I've said in the last few classes, every morning I get up in the morning, right? I go into the bathroom to brush my teeth, right? And to do all the duties you have to do, have the shower. Then I have the lectures playing. I've been doing this for 20 years or so. Right, have the lectures playing. So by the time it takes half an hour for you to go in, 40 minutes, for you to go and take a shower, get dressed, put on tilak, whole time listening to lecture. Right? So by the time you even get to the temple for Mangalati, you've already heard an entire class. Right? This makes the intelligence strong, because the mind is very powerful, right? The mind is so powerful, you will not be able to defeat your mind, right? If your mind becomes attached to something, you won't be able to control it, right? So you have to make your intelligence very strong. And intelligence becomes strong when you hear the Shastra. It makes the intelligence strong. And then you can control the mind. So in the commentary by the Acharyas at the end of the third chapter of the Gita, they say that when you're dealing with the mind, if the mind is lusty, right, you have four options. What are those four options?
Sam,
Dan, Ed, Dond. You have four options. You can compromise with the mind, right? Or, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says, when you're dealing with the mind, you have to go straight to Dund. Dunda. Dunda means? Big stick. Dunda. You know, like the sannyasi carries a dunda. Right? Means like big stick. Right? So when you go to the mind, he says you have to go straight to Dunda. You can't make any compromise. Right? If the mind starts saying, I want this, I want that, you just have to pick up the stick and you say, Hare Baba. You want a big hit? Like that? And then sometimes he says, yeah, okay, what are you going to do? What will you do? What will you do? So you hold the stick and he says, what will you do? Bang! Like that. When you're dealing with the mind, you have to hit the mind. Right? Because the mind only needs a slight amount of space. Just like Prabhupada said, when we preach Krishna consciousness, we come in like a needle, right, and out like a plow. Right? We just need a little gap in the Hare Krishnas, we sneak in, right, and then we take over everything. So Maya works in exactly the same way. She just needs a little crack, you just give her a little crack, she gets in there and then she takes over everything. So if you see your mind getting out of control, if you see Maya creeping in, then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, get the stick, get the danda, and then hit it immediately. Right? Control your mind, right? With your intelligence. Make your intelligence strong so you can control your mind. Control your lust. Right? And engage in something higher. Krishna says in the Gita, basically the entire philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita is based on param drishtva nivartate. You have to get a higher taste. You have to get something superior. Right? You can't just tell your mind that I will not have any sense gratification. Right? You have to say to your mind, I will give you something superior. Right? You cannot have this, but you can have something better. And what is better? Right? It is Krishna consciousness. Right? It is dancing and chanting the holy names of Krishna. It is hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is worshipping the deities. It is going to the temple of the holy Dham. And it is associating with advanced devotees. Right? So we say to our mind, you can have all of this. Right? So if you give your mind something better, if you give it the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, then it becomes easy to control the mind. But if you don't give your mind something higher, then it's very difficult to control. So basically in this material world, our problem is avidya. It is ignorance. But by the process of Krishna consciousness, it is the most powerful way to overcome this ignorance. As taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Shikshastika, Krishna consciousness will take you from sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti to prema bhakti. It will take you to the highest state of love of Godhead. Just by following this simple process of Harinam Sankirtan. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we have discussed. No, Prabhupada said you have to read his books 1 or 2 hours a day.
So it's not taken into account. But in, he also said about shravana. Is it?
Means hearing lectures?
Yes.
Prabhupada asked us to read his books 1 or 2 hours a day. I can tell you honestly, I don't do that. I don't sit down every day 1 hour, 2 hours just with Prabhupada's books reading. I don't do that. But I do listen 1 or 2 hours a day to lectures. So I take it that that is keeping me enthused in my Krishna consciousness. Like that. I should also be reading Prabhupada's books 1 or 2 hours a day. I don't do that every day. Some days I do. But I don't do it every single day. Like that. But I think most days I do listen to lectures for at least that much. Like that. So the point is that you need to, as much as possible, be absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna. You know, when you have so much spare time. Just like when I was a brahmachari, we used to learn shlokas from Bhagavad Gita and from Bhagavatam. Then in the morning after class, we would go to the kitchen and take all the buckets of prasadam up. So all the brahmacharis, we had our Bhagavad Gita shlokas or Bhagavatam shlokas, and as we're going up, we're learning the lines of the shlokas. We'd take all the buckets up 2 or 3 times. By the time we got up, right, we'd memorized one shloka, you know, the Sanskrit, and then during the day, we would keep learning that. You know, whenever you have a little bit of time, or they said some statistic in America, I heard it a few years ago, that something like 10% of people's lives are spent waiting in queues. They said something like that. Something like 10% of lives. Like people either in a traffic jam or at the bank or at the supermarket or in a queue. So when we were brahmacharis, then we used to always have our shlokas with us. So we'd go out on book distribution and then we'd have to go to the bank to change the money or the coins into notes like that. So then when we're standing there in the queue, we'd all be reading our shlokas, learning our shlokas. Or when you're waiting for the tram or when you're doing this. But you should always be absorbed. You should always have one of Prabhupada's books with you. You should always have your MP3 player with you. You should always have some shloka with you. In other words, you always have spare time. So much spare time is there. What did Prabhupada say? Don't waste time. Have you heard that Krishna Prem album? Krishna Prem, one of the devotees in our movement, he made one of those CDs, I think it's called Krishna Vision. And Prabhupada said, don't waste time. Don't waste time. If you use your time, you've got so much time to read and chant and to hear and like that. It's okay. Okay. Any other points? We don't have to do anything, we just chant, come home, dinner's cooked, everything's done. It says in the Bhagavatam it's all the wife's responsibility, so I'm just going to leave it at that. I was joking, that's all like that. No, that it means there's equal responsibility. The husband's responsibility, because men have stronger sex desire, right? So because men have stronger sex desire, it is the duty of the wife to protect the husband from falling down to illicit sex, right? But it is the duty of the husband, because women are more sensuous in general, although our sex desire is stronger, but the women's material desires generally are stronger. They have more material desires. Just like, you know, do you see us wearing all different colours and, you know, have we got earrings and, you know, have we got eyeliner and all that. You know, we don't feel like we need these things like that, but they do. They got more material desires. It's the nature of the body that they're in, right? It's not anything different. It's just a different type of body. Like, men have got a particular urge, they have stronger sex desire, right? And they have stronger desire for material facility and so forth. So the duty of the husband is to keep the wife focused on Krishna consciousness. Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj explained it very nicely one day. He said that the duty of the wife is to stop the husband from going back into Maya
And the duty of the husband is to take the wife and the family forward in Krishna consciousness. So sometimes the husband becomes a little sensually weak, but the wife says, no, it is not appropriate. Right? You have to stay fixed in your Krishna consciousness. So she stops us from going back. And then the husband, his duty is to lead the family, if he stay fixed on Krishna, right, and stay fixed on his sadhana and fixed on his devotional service and fixed on making progress. And then the wife, she assists the husband and she follows the husband and the family follows the husband in that direction. So in other words, it's a, how do you say it? It's a, yeah, reciprocal, cooperative relationship. It's a, I'm just trying to think, there's like a word. Prabhupada says it's like a unit. It's like a, I'm trying to think, there's a word. It's like a team or a unit or a, there's one word but I can't think of what it is. It's like that. It's a unit. It's meant to go together. Husband and wife are meant to assist each other in developing Krishna consciousness, like that. When it becomes a team, it becomes very powerful. If there's conflict between the husband and the wife, then it becomes very difficult for both of them to progress like that. Sometimes the husband is obstinate, and sometimes the husband is pig-headed, and sometimes the husband is, you know, just ask my wife. No, it means that the husband is inspiring and leading the wife in the right direction, that's all. It's not that she just says, oh, okay, you chant all the rounds, you read all the books, and I'll just cook and do your laundry. No, it doesn't work like that. It means she also has to be following his example. So she's making advancement, but she's following his... And sometimes, and not even sometimes, I mean, it can be quite often, the wife is the person who's more spiritually advanced in the family. So then the husband has to become inspired by her. So the point is, it should be a relationship in which we inspire each other to become Krishna conscious. That's the point.
But she's always busy maintaining the house and looking after the kids and doing the responsibility of the husband. And she has no time for not doing things. So she struggles to find the time for chanting and other things. So I find that.
It's a lot of work for everyone in Kali Yuga, like that. So for everyone it's a lot of work, but you can't say there's no time. It's very difficult for the woman when the child is young, like for the first 2 years, because the child is very demanding at that time. So yeah, it's difficult, but still she should follow the principles. She should chant her rounds and she should practice and like that. It's not that she should not do these things. She should follow like that. It's difficult, but it can be done. It can be maintained. There's so many good Grihastha families in this community who are bringing up children and they're becoming Krishna conscious. Just like in the Bhakti Vaibhava course, Jawalesh Babu and Padmabhaja, they're two devotees who come, Grihastha couple, they come for the Bhakti Vaibhava class in the evening and they have their kids asleep on their laps. Right, she has the one child and he has the other child and they're sitting there and they're taking notes on the class, and even we had the exam last week. They were sitting there for 2 hours writing the exam, the kid was asleep on the lap and they were like... So if you are serious about Krishna consciousness, then you know you can make advancement like that.
So when do you give the kids to stay asleep while you're doing the exam?
If the child is conceived in the right consciousness, the child will be saintly by nature. So generally, you see these children are quite, they're quite good kids, quite well behaved. I've got about 7 kids in the class at the moment. they're quite well behaved. Yeah. Sometimes they have their leelas. And sometimes I give them class and then they're like crawling under the table across the room. Like that. As long as they don't get too noisy. If they get too noisy, I say, well, okay, you have to go outside because we can't concentrate. But generally they're pretty good. So if the children are conceived in the right consciousness, generally they'll be saintly personalities. And they'll take you back to Godhead. That is the idea. Like that, so. Any other points? Is that okay?
So So she's helping, I mean, her wife is helping her spend a lot in progressing in Krishna consciousness. And she has no time in maintaining her presence. Would she expect anything from what her husband performs? I mean, like, you know, there is always a basic suggestion telling that whatever husband performs, wife takes half of it.
Yeah. It says at the end of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says the wife gets 50%. And if he goes back to Godhead, she goes as well. Sound okay? Yeah. Krishna looks after everyone, don't worry. The what?
Sins.
What, your wife is performing sin? About?
Leaving the prasadam, just leaving something in the plate.
Oh, if you leave something on the plate. And we said in the class that that's a... that's an aparad, you'll get reaction. Yeah, so... if you get prasadam, right, then you have to finish everything on your plate, right? If you leave something on your plate, right, that's an aparad, and in your next life, you'll go hungry for that amount that you leave on your plate every time. That much you will not have in your next life. It's a great offence to prasadam. You have to finish everything on your plate, right? And if there's too much on your plate, that's your problem. You have to finish it. That's the point. So if your wife is doing that, then tell her to come and see us and we'll preach to her and we'll tell her. Like that. Because if she's doing that, she should not be doing that. That's an offence. But I don't think it'll mean that she won't go back to the spiritual world if she's sincere devotee. But it's an offence. It has to be. These things cannot be done. Like that. In Jagannath Puri, where Lord Jagannath's prasadam is... Because prasadam is non-different from the deity. And Jagannath Puri, they are very, very serious about respecting Jagannath's prasadam. Jagannath's prasadam is non-different from Jagannath. Right? Mahaprasad is non-different from the deity. So I've seen that when sometimes the pandas, they deliver the prasadam, they come and they bring Jagannath's prasadam. One time I saw the panda, his foot touched one of the clay pots, and immediately he offered his obeisances to the prasad. Like that. So that if you understand what prasad is, right, it is non-different from the deity, then you will not, it's disrespectful to not honour at all. So if the devotees understand this point, then they will not do it. So if your wife is doing that, then you just say, please do not do that, because it is an offence to Jagannath and it's an offence to the deity. Is it okay? If she doesn't listen, then tell her to come and speak to us. Okay. Any other points?
Regarding anger, when you have services and it goes wrong, something goes wrong, you end up displeasing other devotees, anger comes in. How to tackle that situation? How to see if someone gets angry on us or other people?
Yeah, sometimes we have to be firm. Like, you know, sometimes we're doing some service, and if you are the leader, then sometimes you have to be firm in order to keep all the service going on the right track. You're managing Crossways, it's a big responsibility. Sometimes you have to be firm. But you should try not to be angry. You have to become, you know, very angry and, you know, throw the cup of lassie at the wall. You know, you don't have to let it lose control. Right, but you have to be firm. You say, sometimes you speak in a very firm tone. You say, Prabhu, come on, and get like that. I like that. So, it is given the example that there was that cobra, that snake, and he was a devotee, and all the children were throwing rocks at him. So he said to Narada, I just want to be peaceful, I'm a devotee now. But all the children, they're throwing rocks at me. So then Narada said, then if they come, then you go, shh. You know, the snake goes like that. He said, you do that. So you pretend you're angry, not that you're actually angry, but you just pretend you're angry so that they will go away. So sometimes when we become angry as devotees, it should be like that. Not that we're really angry, but we just have to sometimes be a little bit heavy. Just like I remember one time, just here, or here, I think just there, then Tamal Krishnamurti and Burujan Prabhu, 1993, they were giving class together. So I was serving Tamal Krishnamurti at that time. So I remember there's a video like that, and I'm sitting in front of them, and Tamal Krishnamurti, he leans forward and he says something to me, and because I couldn't work out how to use the recording device, because his servant wasn't going to come to the class, so he gave me the recording device. So I was setting it all up, but I couldn't work out how to use it. Tamal Krishnamurti, he leant forward and he was heavy with me, angry at me. He said, "You don't know what you're doing." He said, "Go and get Radha Krishna." So he's heavy, so I was like, you know, I got up and ran out. And then I got up and ran out, but then later on I watched the video. So he was heavy on me, but then as soon as I left it, he just smiled and he just started speaking to Burujan Prabhu. So he wasn't really angry, but he was just using a little bit of, you know, sternness or intensity just to get the service done, like that. So like Prabhupada sometimes would blast the devotee very heavy, but then next moment, like that. So sometimes you have to use a little bit of, like that, be a little bit firm to get their service done. But devotee, it doesn't mean we feel angry like that. Is it okay? What you should do. It depends on the relationship, because within Vaishnava etiquette, if you get angry with a superior, right, that's an aparad. So if someone is the junior devotee and they get angry to you, then that is wrong on their behalf. So if they do that, you have to correct them. You have to say, "Prabhu, what are you doing? Yeah, I'm asking you to do this. You should be following what I'm saying." Like that. If a senior devotee gets angry on us, then we, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam, we should be humble. We should accept that, a little bit of mercy. Like that. But if the junior devotee, then so it should not be like that. So it's only the senior devotee, he can be a little bit angry on the junior devotee if he needs to be. But generally, that should not be the tone of the relationship. It should not be like the whole relationship is just, you know, with the senior devotee is that they're always angry on us. They should be very loving and affectionate, like a father and a mother. But sometimes the father and mother, they have to correct the child, otherwise the child becomes spoiled. So therefore, okay. Does that answer? Okay. Any other question or comment? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.